You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard on the web all over God's magnificent planet, Miss Ellen.
Amen. Yes, all over the planet, worldwide. It's pretty cool to see all of those hits from Ireland and the UK and some other places out there. But you can find all of our shows for the last 10 years pretty much on our CETA Media Inc. website. You can go to 1510 WWBC and you can hit the on-demand button and listen to us live
right away. Ellen and I sit down here with Paul in our studio every Monday and we speak to our listeners and our friends and people who support our show. We talk about kitchen table topics, things going on around the nation and right here in Brevard County, Florida. And today's no different.
No, it's a beautiful day out today.
It is. Nice. And Paul reminded me last week, I said it was a sunny day and it really wasn't. It was raining.
Well, nobody knows.
So our show is fun and it's unscripted and it's very educational and we give out valuable information, whether someone wants to open a business, whether a person is thinking about joining a nonprofit, people who are running for office. Whatever it is, we try to be fair and we are balanced and we understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, so we play nice.
That's right, we do.
And so today, Ellen, you know, we have two call-ins today. Yes. I have a girl who's calling in from California. I hope they didn't mix up the time because it is Eastern time. Her name is Shalise Bihari and she wrote a book called The Prince and His Mother's Crown. And she'll be joining us on air in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then our second segment, the ACLU Brevard County, Florida, my friend Christy Marie is calling in with Chris Curtis, and they're going to talk a little bit with us when they call in on the second segment about criminal justice reform and some issues that they think we can garner some bipartisan support. So we have an action-packed day today, but I also started a new thing for our listeners who are tuning in. We have a lot of friends who, when we have guests who are calling in, that would like to come in studio and be part of our show and be like a CETA and Friends observer. And so I recruited a friend, Amy Matthews, and she's here. So Amy, welcome to our show and thanks for joining Ellen and I on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And I have other people that want to join.
Of course,
yeah. Ellen, you are my right hand.
I will always be. You know me. I'm never too far away. That's for
I think
sure.
The whole of Brevard knows that you and I met at ABWA.
Yes.
That you've been with me for 10 years on the show. And you know what people don't understand is, in addition to doing this show every Monday for a year, for how long?
Yeah, for 10 years.
52 weeks. How much time have we taken off?
Oh, yeah. Net two times. We've had two shows that we had to replay. But that was it.
That was it, right?
In 10 years.
So what a commitment, right?
It is.
Thank you
fantastic.
For your loyalty for the yeah. show as well. And in addition to that, I kept my full-time job 4 days a week working as a nurse, and I ran for office because you said, never give up my steady stream of income.
That's right. Right?
Now, you also build websites. You help people open companies.
I do.
You manage a lot of people here in Brevard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, a lot of our friends, they know we're pretty ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
That's why good things come our way.
Yeah. That's good karma, and hopefully we spread that
right
to everybody.
And but thank you though, because I know you depend on me to get the guests, get the bookings, get the money so we could help our station.
Absolutely,
so that Paul
yes.
could keep the doors open.
Yeah.
But it is a commitment, and with the year ending, we're going into our 11th year.
You know, it's so
people
exciting.
Ask me all the time, well, why didn't you accept the jobs that other people offered you all elsewhere? Well, we really don't need to. We're doing a great job right here in Brevard County, Florida.
Right.
And so, but before we go to our guest, I know that Shalise Bihari is on the phone, but before we go to our guest, I just wanted to tell our friends that I will be taking the vaccine, the COVID-19 vaccine, when it becomes available at our nursing facility, because I believe that I believe in science, and I believe that in order to keep our residents at the nursing home safe, those of us who take care of them will have to. And also, you know, people are saying, well, now that the vaccine is here, they're going to let their guard down. Please don't. Continue to wear your mask, continue to wash your hands, and social distance guidelines if you can, right? We have to be the ambassadors for the vaccine. And we are, healthcare workers are simply exhausted, Ellen. We are tired.
It has been a long road. And my family, most of my family's in health care or first responders.
Yeah, we're wearing our masks.
Wearing people out for sure.
We're wearing our masks. It's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but it's necessary, right? And I saw where that the nurse in New York took it this morning, and I have to tell you, I was very impressed because Governor Cuomo had her on, and I put something on my Facebook. I said, you know, she is a Jamaican sister, and she's a Caribbean American Jamaican sister, and mm-hmm. her name is Lindsay. And it says there's a website that I follow for the Caribbean people, and people are very proud of her that she took that vaccine because it is going to inspire other people to take the vaccine as well,
sure,
and believe
yeah.
in science and common sense. But mm-hmm. anyways, so that's what I'm looking at this morning before I came on the show. I said that'll be my CETA facial today, talking about
go.
The vaccine.
CETA commercial. Yeah. That's great.
And so we have on the phone, we have Shalice Bihari. Shalice, thank you for taking the time from, are you in California this morning?
Yes, I am. And it's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Thank you so much. I read your bio again. And you know what? I feel like I know you already. So your name, you know what attracted me when I saw your name, right? I'm like, oh, Bihari. She sounds like she's Indian. And then
my parents are from the Caribbean. They're from Jamaica. And my dad is Indian Jamaican.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. I thought so. And this morning I was like, oh, two Caribbean sisters in one day. How do you like that?
Yeah.
Well, so Ellen Little is here. Ellen O'Neill is here. She's my co-host, and we also have a friend who's observing the show today. Her name is Amy Matthews, and we're happy that you're calling in. So you wrote this book, and I could tell that part of this book is about your own experience, correct?
Yes, with my sons.
Right. And so were you raised in Jamaica, or were you born here in Boston, Massachusetts, it says?
Yes, I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, but I've been back to Jamaica several times a year throughout my childhood. So I kind of feel like I grew up there part of the time, too, because we were constantly there visiting my grandparents and my other family members who still reside down there
yeah.
as well.
Well, you know, I'm a Trini, and I took my children every year to Trinidad because I wanted them to experience the culture, and it is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how'd you go from, you started your career in fashion, music, and in the entertainment industry, and you also owned your own fashion label, you had your own showroom, and then life changed. So tell our audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, take it from there. What happened to lead you to this point where you wrote the book, and now you moved to California, you have your son, and you're sharing such an inspiring story with us, with the people that want to read your book, and people who are just inspired by you?
Thank you. Well, it's been like a whirlwind. I've traveled all over the world. I've moved to a lot of different places before I was in New York City. And as you said before, I was in the fashion, music, and entertainment industry. I've owned my own fashion label and showroom. Unfortunately, in 2016, I had a freak accident, which rendered me blind. So I am visually impaired. So that's when my life totally changed. I had just had my my second son at that point in time, and it was a real adjustment being a new mom at that time, becoming blind and having to figure out how to reconfigure my life, and then being a mom to my six-year-old son at that.
So how started the blindness? I mean, how did you get to that point?
Well, I had an accident to the face, to the head, and it detached my retinas. And then when they fixed the retinas, I developed glaucoma. And then glaucoma suffocated my optic nerve. And then that gradually took away my vision.
Wow, I'm sorry, but you know, but you didn't let that stop you. You decided to explore your creative side and exercise your creativity in writing this book. And so I applaud you for that, because, you know, I don't know a lot of people who could cope with that and so young.
Yeah, it was a real adjustment, and it was a lot of things going on at the time. But, you know, I thank my parents for raising me the way that they did and being so resilient and being able to bounce back and, you know, not letting anything stop me at that point in time, you know, being a mother to my children and, you know, finding a different career path for myself at that point in time. So really the inspiration for my book came from my sons. You know, my youngest son, you know, his love for my hair is infinite, and he's always playing in my hair no matter what he happens to be doing. He's always running his fingers through my hair. At night, he's playing with my hair. He's combing my hair in all different styles. And my son Nicholas was like, oh, you know, he was an avid reader, and he decided, well, he was like, you should write a book about Christian loving your hair. So, you know, I took him up on that offer, and I wrote this book.
How long did it take you to write the book?
From start to finish, it took me about a year. And it would have been shorter, but as other events in my life transpired, unfortunately, my 9-year-old son at the time, he died with his father in a tragic car accident in 2019. So at that point in time, I stopped everything, production on my book. I stopped everything because, you know, that was such a devastating blow. And I didn't really start back up on the project until April of this year.
Wow. Well,
Natalie, you got a ton of books to write.
Yeah.
A ton of books to write, Shalice, definitely. We're so sorry for all of that. But, you know, out of tragedy becomes, you know, I always say the comeback is always better than the setback.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I don't think you'll ever get over it, but you will use their memory to create something for yourself and your boy, you know? And as I read about you online this morning, you know what? We might not share the same skin color or the same hair texture or eye colors or the same, you know, human beings are not all the same, right? We're not created equal in that way. But you've written this book at a time when African-Americans are talking about the book Hair Love. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard about that. I was just watching TV the other day, and they were talking about Hair Love and how many people, your hair, you know, in the Indian culture, they used to tell us your hair is your beauty. I don't know if you were told that, right? You know that, right? And they didn't want us to cut our hair, right? So when we cut our hair, it was like, oh, my God, so-and-so daughter has short hair, you know? And so it was like, oh, my God. And I was one of those girls in our village that back in Trinidad that I parted my hair in the middle, and it was down to my bottom, and I took a scissors one day, and I cut it up to almost to my ear, and I got a lot of licks, you know? But I was watching TV the other day, and they were talking about Hair Love and how a lot of African-American women, when they get accepted for a job or they're going for a job interview, in order to be more accepted, they were literally told not to have an afro, have their hair flat ironed, put it in a bun. But you, in your book, you're teaching people how to love their hair.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty much, like, you know, especially as African-American women or women of color, there's so many different things that we can do with our hair. We can wear it flat ironed and straight. We can wear it in a bun. We can wear it braided. We can wear it cornrowed. We can wear it in an afro. We can wear it in dreadlocks. There's so many different ways that we can wear our hair, and we're so multifaceted in the ways that we do wear our hair. And, you know, for my son, he was amazed by how many different things and different ways that I could wear my hair. And from that, it's like no matter how I wore my hair, he always knew that I was still his mom, and he knew that I still loved him. But, you know, there was just this magic, this, you know, black girl magic that took place when, you know, I did something different with my hair. And really, the book is about embracing your hair, embracing
who, like, you, who are. Embracing your existence.
Yes.
So did you have, yes, like, did you ever have like a braid when he thought you were like Rapunzel?
Yes.
Because I saw it on Amazon. Somebody said something about the hair being, you know, like Rapunzel. But you wanted to convey a message to people that to love yourself, because your, yes, son, through your hair, he gave you this unconditional love, and he appreciates you so much.
Yes,
and such a simple thing.
And you know that, like, most books about hair, I noticed, are, you know, for little girls and about little girls. And I just thought it was very different that my son took notice to my hair, and, you know, he was fascinated with my hair. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with little boys, you know, wanting to play in hair or combing a woman's hair in all different styles and stuff like that. So, you know, he's just uniquely him with his love of, you know, my hair.
Right. So how did you come up with the title of the book? Tell our audience how you came up with the title of the book, Prince and His Mother's Crown.
Well, my boys, I would always call them my prince. Like, you know, my eldest boy, I would call him my prince. And then when my youngest was coming up, they were both my little princes. You know what I mean? And it just, the idea, the pictures, the theme, everything just clicked one day, and I was like, Prince, and then His Mother's Crown, which means it's like a double entendre with her hair and her crown, meaning her, you know, like her wreath of hair, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's all encompassing, you know, with a crown, Prince and His Mother's Crown, and then the tales which he tells within his mother's hair. So it all kind of came together and melted well.
It's quite beautiful. So Amy, I'm going to ask Amy, did your children ever play in your hair? Comb your hair?
Yeah.
Or enjoy it?
Yeah.
My daughter. My daughter.
Yeah, they put clips and combs, and I've had things stuck in my hair. I've had to untangle. I've had to unwind a whole bunch of combs, and yes.
Yeah. I was asking Amy in the studio with us if her children ever played in her hair. Did they?
Okay.
Yes.
They did.
Yes.
They did. And Ellen did. Well, Ellen, you've had your hair different colors, different styles.
Oh, yeah. And I'm the youngest of many, many females in my family. I have a lot of sisters. So they all, I was like the cut and curl Barbie. So they would like cut my hair and play with my hair and color my hair and all kinds of stuff.
But you know, Shalise, when I was a teenager back in Trinidad and Tobago, there was a time when we had 10 girls in our family because we're 18 siblings and all, right? And my mother would line us up on the steps, the back step. So each daughter had a step, and, you know, based on our height, we would all be combing each other's hair and putting it in two braids. Because, you know, back then we wore uniforms and it had to be one braid or two braids. But in the morning, I mean, you brought back such love and memories, because I never thought of it, but it was such a beautiful time in my life that there would always be 6 or 7 of us at any given time with a comb, passing the comb from one to the other, combing hair, braiding, because that was part of our ritual, part of our routine. And we didn't really give it any thought, because that's what you do. You brush your long hair, you put it in a braid, or you put it in a bun, you know? So what kind of kid were you when you were growing up?
I was one of those kids that played in my mom's hair.
Yeah.
My mom had, she has curly hair like Tracy Ellis Ross, and my sister and I used to love playing in her hair, and we would take, you know, the VO5 hair grease and bubbles and
remember
some clips
that?
and just, you know, have at it at her hair, and she would sit there so patiently. Like, it was like every Saturday we'd be watching like The Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous or something like that, and we'd be combing through her hair, and it was a bonding time and a ritual time for us as daughters, you know, playing with our mom's hair. And then we would get my dad in on the action too, you know.
Yeah,
so we'd be playing his hair as well, so it was a nice family fun time for us.
Right. Did you have a wild imagination like your son, like Prince, when it comes to hair?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I actually started writing ever since I was little. And my first book that I ever did, it wasn't published, but the first book that I can remember doing was called Boy, What a Day. And I think I was like 6 or 7, and my teacher had, she had 2 cardboard pieces of paper, which we lined with wallpaper, and she had duct tape. She put some pages in the book, and then she lined it with duct tape, and then we just were able to, you know, create a story. And I created a story called Boy, What a Day, which was about a little girl who woke up in the morning, stumbled out of bed, and everything from the time she woke up to the time she came home, like, went wrong. Like, all the, it's like Murphy's Law, all, you know, whatever can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah.
And so it was a cute little book about that, and that was my first book that I ever did. But, you know, creating stories and writing poetry, I've always been really, really good at that.
Well, this book is a really good book for someone to snuggle up and at night at bedtime and read to their kid. And probably you'll be starting, you know, where all children and this new fashion would be that they comb their hair in the night with their moms. Because it is really a very loving thing, because I know I did that too with my children. But I never thought that it could be put into a book. But it is love. It is love, mm-hmm. and it's appreciation for your mom or your grandmother or the woman in the house. So children's book help develop emotional intelligence and creativity, and it also nurtures growth. Did you ever think about writing an adult book, or you just want to stick with children's books?
I want to write a memoir at some point. I would love to do that. Right now, I do love writing children's books because I'm a kid at heart. And I have a vivid imagination, so I can come up with some really creative stories. And I actually, this book is a part of a series. So this is the first book of my series. And my next book is called Prince and His Mother's Crown Hairpocalypse. And then the next one after that is Prince and His Mother's Crown A Very Hairy Christmas. So Hairpocalypse, a little look into Hairpocalypse, is basically his mother gets the big chop. And, you know, he's devastated that his mother gets this big chop, and it kind of takes him through the day at the hairdresser when he thinks it's just a routine day at the hairdresser, and then it becomes this, like, devastating event that his mother decides to cut off all her hair.
You have quite the imagination, but, you know, you could add in that is that if Prince's mom cuts off 6 inches of her hair, she can give it to the Cancer Society, you know,
right?
Yeah. So it takes out, it could take on a whole different meaning, because then you're educating Prince about what happens when you do give up the hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about that too. And I thought about doing that for like Breast Cancer Awareness Month or just Cancer Awareness Month. Yeah, so that has run across my mind. And then A Very Hairy Christmas is basically like her process of growing back her hair for Christmas, you know, and she gets her hair back. So, so that's basically the series. And, you know, I have other books that are in the works. They're not of the Prince series, but they're other books.
So. Yes. Well, so tell our listeners where they can find your book, and give us your website.
Okay. Well, my website is authorshalisebahari.com. And that's authorshalisebahari.com. And you can find my books on the Book Baby Bookshop at bookbaby.com. I'm also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's.
You know, your book should be in every public library, because women, girls, we have such a love-hate relationship with our hair. And I do believe, like I tried to tell my grandchild this, she cut off her hair this weekend. She cut off about 4 inches. And I was like, no, you can't cut your hair. Your hair is your beauty. And she's like, Nanny, that's a very backward thing to say. And I was like, no. But she says, oh, this is America. We don't think like that. Over here, we style our hair at a salon. You know, mm-hmm. And so she did, and then she looked fabulous. But for me, I don't know. I mean, it just took me back to when I was a child, and we were told literally, that is your crown. That's who you are. The way you comb your hair, the way you style it. And of course, we didn't have money to buy hair coloring. So, you know, we had to be stuck with this dark hair, right? So was mm-hmm. your book well received by your relatives in Jamaica and your friends here? Did you have any challenges and hurdles to people reading the book and appreciating it? What sort of response did you get?
Well, my book was well received, but just growing up too, I had that same hurdle to cross, especially with my father, because he is very old school Jamaican Indian man. And, you know, growing up, there were three things we didn't do. We didn't get pregnant, we didn't cut our hair, and you didn't get any tattoos.
Ooh, you know, that sounds like my dad too.
So, you know, going off to college, I did cut off all my hair when I went off to college, you know, and I remember that day I came home and my hair was short, like, it was like a Halle Berry style. And he just looked at me and he was so, like, he was furious. He was furious that I cut off all my hair. But then, you know, eventually he got over it. And
well, that's what they call back home the boy cut.
Yeah,
because you know your hair is also your identity as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what mm-hmm. you know. That's what my dad and my mom would say to us too. So for our listeners who are just tuning in, we're speaking with the author of Prince and His Mother's Crown, and her name is Shalise Bihari. You know, we had a lot of Biharis in my village back home. You might be related. Who knows? And Ellen is.
You'd be surprised how many people see this related to.
So Ellen is putting your book on our website, and we'll try to you know, inform our friends and relatives about it as well. Yeah. I'd love to have you call in again. You know, for what you've been through in life, and I don't know where the good Lord gave you your coping mechanisms, but you know, I'm glad to know you, and I'm glad you took the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, because you've had your share, my friend.
Yes, you have, certainly.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for sharing your story.
What were you saying?
Thank you. No, I'm happy to be here, and I'm, you know, I'm very blessed to be able to share my story with you guys. And
I could see your book becoming a movie later on, but I was going to ask you, what part of California are you in?
I'm in Monrovia.
I don't
know.
Okay, I'm not sure.
Well, if you've been watching for the past couple months where the fires are, that's basically where my house is, like in our backyard. If you look out, you know, our hillsides are charred and they're burned, and we basically had to evacuate because of the fires.
Another tragedy. There's another book.
I know, girl.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again so much for tuning in. If you check out our Facebook page, I've got Shalise's website already posted for you. We are going to take a quick station break, and then we'll be right back right after these messages from Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9, that's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. Medfast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. Medfast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're also heard on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard live online. Miss Ellen, take it away.
We are. You can find us on SitaMediaInc.com or SitaMedia.com and also on 1510WWBC.com. You'll see all the shows for the last 10 years are on our website, the Sita Media Inc. And then you can also download any show or listen on demand on 1510WWBC. Quick button.
And so today in studio, we have what we're calling now our show's observer. Our friend Amy Matthews is here, and she's really relaxed. She's having a great time listening to the show. Ellen is here, of course, and Paul is running the board. Our first segment was really good. That was a really nice discussion about hair with Shalise Bihari. I could just see her son playing in her hair every night and her just loving it and using that to write a book and be creative about it.
It almost seems like meditative, you know, like something very peaceful, because I think we all had that experience where, you know, it's sort of like that bonding moment or so forth. So I don't know if it's as much about the hair as it is about the
bonding,
the inference, about the bonding, about the time together, about the spending time together. So it was such a beautiful story, and wow, what a tragedy. She didn't let it define her. Like a friend of mine just texted in, Carrie, if you're listening, he said, wow, that didn't define her. That was really cool.
Right.
What a cool story.
Well, you know, it's a way you're raised too. You know, like she was saying, she was with strong people. People from the Caribbean are like that. They'll tell you, you know, just pick it up and go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I meet really lovely people here in Brevard and all over the world, right? And so, my friend Christy Marie's on, and she and Chris Curtis, Chris Curtis is the president of the Brevard chapter of the ACLU, and he serves on the state board. And I've read a lot of stuff that he's written, and I've met Chris, and I've met Christine. Krista, how do you say your name? It's C-H-R-I-S-T-N-A.
Oh, no. Did I misspell my own name?
Yeah, I'm like, have I been saying her name wrong all these years? It's Christina, right? Christina.
Yes.
Christina Marie. Okay, no, you'll have to say your last name.
Okay, it's Kashishian.
Okay, that we would have butchered, really.
Yeah.
So you have a bachelor's degree in science from the Colorado State University and an MBA from Florida State. You're a mother of two. And you're also currently the chapter vice president for the ACLU Brevard. And what you guys do for all of us is phenomenal, and you keep us informed. And, you know, you do it in such a nice way that you can get people from all walks of life to join the ACLU, listen to you, and be part of our community. So thank you both for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yes, and this is going to be a wonderful show. So the topic for you two today is criminal justice reform. And it is one of the issues that's near and dear to my heart. I mean, we all watched when President Trump and Kim Kardashian worked together on criminal justice reform. And he did pass some legislation for that, and I was grateful for that. So it is one of the few issues that gets some bipartisan support. And why do you think so?
Well, that's a great question, Sita. I think what we've seen through history is that a lot of these codes that have been put in place are based on a historical prejudice against African Americans and people of color. And they were designed to keep poor people especially from succeeding. And as time has gone on, I believe societal shifts have kind of changed who falls into that category more and more. So it's a less firm distinction along racial lines and more of a distinction among who is able to succeed in society and who is not. So where people tend to look at race as a divider politically as well, what we're seeing is that more people are falling into the trap that the system has been set up to capture. And those are crossing these partisan divides that are, you know, kind of new to our times. And I think we just have a great opportunity for people to work across the political divides to meet the need of their constituents based socially or strictly on their socioeconomic status,
right,
not strictly on a racial one.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, as we get older and bolder and wiser, I know I am. I think something happens when you hit 50. It's like, wow, you know. But you say to yourself, okay, so we learn from history. We learn from education. We learn from each other. We learn from opportunities. And we learn from listening and sharing our life experiences. And you two do a good job doing that in Brevard County, Florida, for all of us. But Christina, you know, one of the things that the ACLU focuses on is the income inequality. I mean, that in itself is where the communities are so divided. And that was set up in a way, like Chris just said, to divide just humanity on the whole. How did, when you think about income inequality and how it affects humanity, what comes to your mind?
Oh, wow, that's a big one. Income inequality has a huge impact on our criminal justice system. Folks, for example, here in Brevard County, we have a pretty remarkable program for drug offenders to, rather than be routed through the criminal justice system, they're diverted to drug court. But there's a fee associated with that drug court. So when you have folks who don't have the funds to go the drug court route, you're now dealing with folks that are funneled instead into the criminal system, where they still end up having to pay those fines. They accumulate those fines, but they never got that. They didn't have the initial funds to do it the drug court route, and now end up overcrowding our jails. And they're in a system that we acknowledge they don't belong in.
Right.
But they couldn't afford the other system.
It's dehumanizing. And at the same time, a lot of us do know that rehabilitation works better than incarceration. But, you know, like, I think a lot of us look, you know, we sit at home and we watch helplessly. And I think I feel hopeless at times when you see what happens with institutions, because it's all about contracts, right? Contracts for the linen, contract for the food, contract for the medical personnel, contract for somebody to clean the prisons or whatever it is. I mean, how did it get to this point that money, no pun intended, trumps everything?
Well, for-profit prisons are a real thing.
It is, yes.
And you know, any institution that's capable of making money in this country, that tends to become exploited, and that might not be the original intent of a for-profit prison. I mean, the original intent might be somewhat valid to take some of the burden off of the taxpayer. The taxpayers in Florida, I think, I think it costs around $20,000 a year per inmate in the state of Florida. You know, that's a considerable expense. So for-profit prisons or for-profit institutions like this might be originally intended to take some of that burden off the taxpayer, but ultimately then you've got people who are invested in them and they're looking for returns on their stock investments in the prison system, and suddenly human suffering becomes a profit-making machine.
Right, and I don't think we as human beings talk enough about that, and so I would love to have you all back on another show to actually expand on that. But Chris, what is the ACLU doing in Florida to promote the criminal justice reforms?
Well, thanks. We are currently engaging in a new statewide effort to try to address some of, I'm not supposed to use the term low-hanging fruit, but try to achieve some changes that we think are, you know, cross the political divide and are just open to acceptance by everyone across the political spectrum. Specifically, a couple of our goals are to end cash bail, which is a system that disproportionately affects those who are of low income. Cash bail is in place in order to ensure that people will show up to their court dates. But what it ends up doing is it ends up disenfranchising people from their families, from their work, while they sit in jail, unable to post a bond. These are folks who are not committed or not convicted of any crime, and so this really destroys lives. As a result, some 90% of all criminal cases end up in plea deals instead of actually going to trial, so people end up claiming guilt for things that they're not actually guilty of. The other thing that we're looking to accomplish is to end the practice of suspending driver's licenses for infractions that aren't related to driving. There's a number of instances now where if you're unable to pay your fines or fees, the state will take away your privilege to drive, and this causes, you know, untold hardships. You're unable to work, you're unable to take your kids to daycare. This is just yet another burden that the system will place on you if you don't have the means to, you know, manage financially that well.
Right.
So those are our two major goals.
Right. And Christina, you know, it's always been that, I don't know if people do, I do a lot of reading, and I read somewhere where it says that racism, division, hate, and fear actually poses a health risk to us humans. And I don't think a lot of people look at it that way as a civil rights thing, but I think it does. What would you say to someone if they say, yes, that is true? Because I do believe that when we talk about healthcare and wealthcare, it's also, a lot of it has to do with the social ills of society and how people see each other as well.
Oh, absolutely. So I think that you could take that approach in so many directions. Let's just take drug use, for an example. A lot of folks who use drugs are doing so to self-medicate, you know, mental illness, depression, whereas folks with means are able to get a prescription for, you know, a Xanax or, you know, some sort of antidepressant. Folks in the lower income levels are, you know, they're forced to acquire what they can acquire within their limited amount of means. And because those acquisitions might not always be legal, then, you know, you're going to be targeted by, you're not targeted by police, but you're going to have to pay for those criminal activities, which becomes a burden on society in general. But there's also, you know, some dangerous, we all know that there's a lot of danger around the drug trade, the local drug trade. It's not a safe way to live. And if folks had access to health care, they could get proper treatment for their ailments and, you know, work with physicians instead of you know, people on the street, so to speak.
Right. And, you know, we can't stress enough that, you know, we all say that everything starts in the home, right? That like the foundation for everything starts in the home. But not everyone have someone at home to sit down around a kitchen table and speak with them about income inequality or financial literacy or education or why it's important to get a library card. I mean, how do you and Chris see these kind of issues in the big picture when people talk about the communities of color or communities where people don't have access to healthcare, a job, you know, things like that? What can we be doing as people who live in Brevard to promote a healthy lifestyle for folks who don't have someone at home to sit down and talk to them?
Financial literacy is important, and it should be taught in all schools. But when you're looking at, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy of need pyramid, you know, we have folks that are losing food distribution opportunities today, this week, as we speak. There's CARES Act funding for tokens at our local farmers market that's going away this week. Meanwhile, we have thousands of Brevard families who are relying on those food sources. So it's kind of hard to talk to somebody about financial literacy and
when they're hungry.
When they're hungry.
Right.
Exactly.
But where the between you, either you or Chris could answer to this. We have people elected in Brevard and get reelected over and over again, right? Don't they see these issues here in Brevard that they can address locally for us?
Well, I think that might actually be a good question for yourself, Sita. I've read in the paper that you were recently appointed to a board at the county level.
I hope I get in. I think they have to. It has
vote Sita.
I don't know how they do it, but I think I'm appointed. But I think in a week or two, I'll know whether I got in. And you're right. I would love to talk to people about that because, I mean, I see it in my job as a nurse. I work with nursing assistants and support staff. And, you know, I take the time on my break or in between to speak to people and find out, well, how do you survive on $12 an hour? I mean, who's watching mm-hmm. your kids? They want to do a good job, but they also want to know that their kids are attending a public school where there's a teacher that cares about them, a teacher that's paid mm-hmm. adequately and have good health care. And so as a whole, I think we're all in this together. You know, it's like they take care of people's families in the nursing homes, but we have to take care of them as well. And Chris, I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot about that. That I was appointed because it had so much. Some people were negative about it, and some people were positive. But you know me, I'm a person of the world that I'd like to do more to help humanity before the good Lord calls me home. So we'll see what happened. But anyways, but Christina, you were saying that people are going hungry, and it's hard to teach them about financial literacy or get a library card when they're hungry and starving and they can't study at school.
If I may, Christina, I think I would just point out again, you mentioned, Christina, that the state of Florida spends roughly $20,000 on every inmate per year just to keep people locked up. So when people get stuck in these cycles, not only does it destroy their own lives, it also costs taxpayers money. And I think it's a good question to ask yourself if this $20,000 a year is best spent on the prisons or on other social programs. I think that's a very valid question we should consider.
Yeah, I know. We've all talked about mental health as well. Would it be better to spend that money in the community and address people's mental health issues? You know, because when you have a healthy society, you have a happy society, I think, you know. So Christina, you all, when we talked about it, you all coming on the show, one of the things that you all were interested in was the eliminating of the cash bail. And why is that so important? Because that ties into the big picture of the inequality that we see, correct? I'm not sure if Christina, did we lose Christina, Ellen?
I'm not sure.
Are you still there, Chris?
I'm still here, yes.
Yeah, so you touched a little bit about eliminating the cash bail. Why was that such an important thing for you at this time for the ACLU of Brevard to take that under your wing?
Okay. Yeah, I did lose Christina. We were on a conference call, but
that's okay. Well, we have you, thank God. She'll call back.
Yeah, I think I covered this just a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
I jumped ahead of myself. But again, the importance, of course, is to realize what cash bail is for. It's just to make sure that people show up to a court date. It's unfairly prejudiced against people of low income. And effectively, the whole process, I can only refer maybe to a story back in Ferguson. I'm not sure if you recall some of the terrible things that was going on up there, but there was one incident that I read about where there was a woman, she was a single mother, she had her kids at home, she worked on the weekends, but she was pulled over on a traffic violation on a Friday afternoon or a Friday night, and the courts aren't open on the weekend. So she had, I think, was probably driving on a suspended license because couldn't pay her fees, lost her license, pulled over again. If you drive on a suspended license, at least in Florida, that's a felony. So she just went straight to jail for this minor traffic infraction, spent the weekend there, couldn't get to work. You know, there was no one to take care of her kids. There's just nothing good about this story at all. So it's, I think, critically important to address some of these things that impact so many people so directly. And
well,
that's one.
Ellen is just saying, yeah, Ellen, you were saying that it's true. I mean, cash bail, that's what happened. What happens to the children? I mean, who's going to be there to watch them while this lady's sitting
suspended, in... I read that story on a suspended license. That's almost just as criminal.
Right.
You know, that the person goes to jail and has to spend the weekend in jail because of a suspended license. That's just over the top
right.
for me.
Well, I'm glad that you all are taking that on. So Chris, you and Christina have been doing a lot with the Brevard ACLU chapter. How do we get more people involved in, you know, in caring for each other and understanding that when something happens to one segment of society, it affects all of us? Do you have a website? I mean, how does someone get involved?
We do have a website. We have a brand new website. It's still a bit under construction, but the address is brevard.aclufl.org.
Yeah, and that's Brevard. Go ahead.
How much? Brevard.aclufl.org.
Oh, we were just told we have 5 more minutes with you guys, and that's mm-hmm. wonderful. I thought we had less time. Now let's talk. Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about healthcare and Medicaid expansion. I know that you all at the ACLU is just as concerned like me about affordable housing, affordable healthcare, a decent wage, you know, a clean environment. But what can you tell us about what is the ACLU of Brevard? What concerns do you have about Medicaid expansion and affordable healthcare?
To be honest, I don't know that we have any particular positions on that. Outside of non-discrimination issues, there's a lot of folks with disabilities
yes.
and pre-existing conditions, let's say, that we believe those protections are valid parts of the law and that they should remain in place so that people who have special needs have access to the health care that they need.
Yeah. Were you able to get Christina back on the call, or did you is she back? Are you back there?
I am. Thank you, Sita. I am back. I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, no, I was just saying that I know that you and I and Chris and all of us, we do think, I mean, we're like-minded when it comes to talking about things like, you know, a decent wage for people, health care and affordable housing. And you touched a little bit about some of the families in Brevard who are actually living out of their cars, or, you know, they're hungry. We people are waiting on a stimulus check that's not coming. We're not seeing any movement in the Congress right now to help the people through this pandemic and COVID-19. Christmas is coming. What are you hearing at the ACLU with people in Brevard? I mean, what can we do to help those people?
Well, the ACLU, you know, I have my own personal
yeah.
personal beliefs about our socioeconomic system. My experience with the ACLU, there's really not much of an economic focus aside from, you know, racial disparities that are systemic. But here within Brevard, just kind of on a separate note, I've been volunteering with following the Brevard Coronavirus Mutual Aid Group, and there are I mean, just hundreds of families that are still in significant need. And we, I mean, Brevard County had, I think, 3,000 homeless children. It was Christmas of 2018 when I had learned that, and that was long before we had the pandemic erupted. So that need has only grown in 2020. I would love to see, again, this is not ACLU-oriented, but I would love to see the county allocate more of those CARES Act resources toward to our community need here in Brevard. You know, that's where I stand there because, you know, going back to that Maslow hierarchy of needs, if you're not fed, if you're not housed, how can we expect you to be a successful member of our society?
I got you.
So we have 2 minutes left, Christina. I wanted to ask you, how do we promote criminal justice reform in our community? Because people think it doesn't affect them. What can you tell someone who says, well, that doesn't really affect me?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it affects everybody in one capacity or another. So I would say start by educating yourself. You know, go to non-biased sources. The ACLU is a nonpartisan organization. You know, find there's the Sentencing Project is another great organization. And once you've found the information about exactly how this, how criminal justice reform does impact your life, reach out to your state representatives. We have the Brevard delegation meets in January. That's a fantastic opportunity for the community to come and speak to their state representatives about the importance of having reform on a statewide scale. And make sure that you remain vocal about these issues. You know, we tend to only focus on what's right in front of our faces. But eventually, criminal justice reform is going to be in everybody's face.
Yeah, and I love that you all do have bipartisan support. You reach out to everyone in the community. So I think we have like a minute left. So anybody who wants to give us the website again and tell all listeners how to get onto the website and become part of the ACLU Brevard, go for it. Chris?
Sure. You can go to Brevard, B-R-E-V-A-R-D, at ACLUFL.org.
I know. It's so wonderful.
Brevard.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
But just brevard.aclufl.org.
Yeah, it's nice to see young people like you two involved in the Brevard ACLU because oftentimes we see the same people over and over again involved in politics or on boards or doing good things for the community. So thank you both for motivating us and trying to have a voice and encourage us to join the ACLU and be part of your organization.
Well, thank you. I'll say your listeners motivate us as well. So if anybody wants to volunteer, please reach out to us and hopefully we can do some good work together.
Yeah, and it's just another great example of what we provide here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, a little education, a little opportunity for people to maybe, you know, one day, someday somebody's just going to hit the restart button, you know, and decide that the ACLU or decide that some other organization is going to be the way that they're going to fulfill their lives, fulfill their communities, and add value to what they have. So once again, Sita, another fantastic show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Amy Matthews, thank you so much for joining with us today here in the studio. Thanks to Chalice and to our guests from the ACLU. Everything is posted on our Facebook page, and we'll see you next week right here for another edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.